welcome back to a brand new episode of Log Stock and Two Joking Addicts. I'm Romano.
My name is Dean.
Yvonne. Nice to meet you, lads. Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you, brother.
We love the name.
Well, you like it, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the name of the podcast and your name.
My name, Romano.
Romano,
yeah. My dad went to school with a fella in Belfast. So a lot of people come to me, oh, you must have Italian blood in you.
Yeah,
not a bit of it. Not one bit of it.
If your dad just liked the name, liked the sound of a name of a meal.
Exactly.
The Romano special.
Exactly.
That can do. The little bollocks stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what I got called for years, a little bollocks. I was never called by me fucking name. I can't remember the last time my mother actually called me by my name. It was little bastard or little bollocks.
I was always that cunt.
Yeah. I think we all have something similar.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Monday. They used to call me Monday. I'm giving up everything Monday. I'm going to stop everything Monday. It stuck with me then.
Suits you, though.
You gave it up, though, didn't
you? On Monday.
I just when people ask, like, why did they call you Monday? Because, oh, man, I was first up Monday morning. Couldn't stop me, man. You know what I mean?
We can switch it now, yeah.
Yeah. The start of the week, healthy and fresh. Drugs go away.
We both really, really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
No problem at all.
You share a very powerful story. I think I reached out to you a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Funny.
I told you to fuck off. I didn't.
No, but you tell a powerful story, and that's what we want to do by having this podcast is...
You're Irish, I'm like, don't accept anything you're saying. You're giving me a compliment and I'm there, yeah, bullshitting.
Oh, but that's what it does
And then if you say something negative, then I take it in and go, yeah. Oh, he's right, isn't he? The old Irish doubt.
Yeah, 100%, man. I think that's just us all over.
Yeah.
All over.
That's the whole time we're doing this podcast, I've imposter syndrome. I'm not a podcaster, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
I'm only a chancer, like.
Yeah.
I know we're sitting in a big fucking conference room in the middle of
Galway. Big empty
room. A big empty room. Like his head.
There's fine old reeds though, I might take them home.
I was thinking they'd have the decorations down by now. I had mine down.
Bad luck.
Down St. Stephen's there. Get rid of them. Oh, I fucking hate them, man. It's blown out of proportion. It really, really is. I found it very difficult myself over the Christmas, man. Very secluded, isolated.
It was your first robot Christmas and you got through it, so.
Just about, man. Just about. How do you find the Christmas and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, I find it depressing enough at times because everyone's happy. TV is all happy. Everything's happy. And you'd love to be able to, you know... Do like me, hopefully, is to do go and have 3 or 4 points. You start thinking around that way, and then you're thinking, oh, like, yeah, I can't do that. Stop cutting yourself. Play going, going.
No coming back.
No.
Yeah.
If I wake up still drunk, I'm going again. If I wake up hungover, then I'm a cowardly bastard and won't go near it.
That's probably the most difficult part, man. You know, the realization and the next morning, like, why am I fucking doing this to myself again?
Yeah.
Last week, I had a very strong urge to come over me. My missus went back home to Belmullet, and usually that's when my reward would come in. You can go do whatever you want. No one's going to know. Yeah, I'm free. And I was like fantasizing about getting a bag of coke and getting a bottle of whiskey. And I just had to play the tape forward. I hear people saying play the tape forward. And I had to like think, if I get a bag of coke now, I'm going to get stopped on the road tomorrow. My car's going to get taken off me. She's going to know. Going to lose my job, my family, my son. And I was fuck.
But it's a good way of thinking because you're thinking of the longer consequences.
Yeah, whereas before I wouldn't. My impulse, there was no time between my impulse and me using. It was just, gone.
Yeah.
No consequences, nothing like that at all.
And you get that excitement as well, that nervous excitement. Because you're going down there.
Yeah. I was driving home from Belmullet, man, and that song... She stepped out and I stepped in again. I was going down the road the whole way. I was like, oh.
No wonder you thought you want to do drugs and drugs. Belmullet. Now, Belmullet's sound all blessed.
Yeah. I thought they got rid of it years ago.
No, I only found out it existed last year.
Do you know what? It's nice. Very secluded, very isolated. You wouldn't want to be...
It's a sovereign territory of Ukraine. Ireland just sold it.
There's one way in and one way out. That's it. The next point is America.
You don't want to do well in that place, so.
Oh, you do not, man.
We're waiting for you with our tractors.
100%. Yeah, how's life today anyway, bro?
Grand. It's a bit of chest going on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to breathe.
A vape will probably help you.
I know, yeah. I'm on about like it's hard to breathe and I'm vaping away. Like complaining I'm wet and sitting in a fucking shower or whatever. Yeah, so Christmas is, there can be a fucking... It can be a hard time, like, but years ago when I used to be trying to give up drink or trying to give up fags, I'd always pick the hardest time around Christmas or shit like that, because if you can get through that, then you can get through
anything.
Fuck doing it in January, you know what I mean? Do it in December. But the best thing to do is just think of the worst fucking hangovers. Think of the worst times. Think of them and think of that fear you had, and don't be thinking of the like good times, because like, let's be honest, like some of the best times I had was like on drink.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, looking back at memories when I was 16, 15, 18, you know, when we were locked in mad fucking memories of messing with the lads. But look, the negatives outweigh the fucking positives. I could do them without that. And a lot of people, that's what they're worried about, because, you know, obviously someone in recovery or someone not drinking anymore or not taking shit, they haven't regained that natural confidence. So you're cowardly and you were afraid and you're not able to be confident. And the drugs and drink give you that confidence. So it's, you know, you're going to jump at it.
Did you pick up drink from a young age?
Yeah. Young enough, like. I didn't really get, like, mad into it till I was about 15. We'd go off for a smoke, like, every fucking day, really. But most of the boys kept it smoke. But me and another friend just started getting, like, 2 cans. And we'd get a bit of hash. And then it was 3 cans. It was 4 cans. Then it was an agate. And then it just built up from there.
I can relate to that as well. I picked up my first drink when I was about 13. And it was vodka and cans. I puked me ring, man. I was blacked out drunk, and everyone was like, get him bread quick. I just soak up the alcohol before my mother came.
I'm not a duck.
I was like a duck, a sitting duck on my back. I think it was about 13, puking me ring. And I thought that like would have been a deterrent for me. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. After I came around to myself, I thought it was funny.
And then you feel like you've made it as well. Like you're out with the lads, and then you're looking up. Like when I was growing up, my role models were car thieves and drug dealers. I want to be like them when I grow up, like.
Right.
I used to have to be carried in up to my nanny's. So the compound was down on the corner. The lads used to have to carry me up out the 2 cans and dump me in my nanny's garden, knock on the door and leg it.
Take this waster in.
Yeah.
He's not able.
See, yeah, but it's like that when you're a teenager. You look up to the messes in the estate, because they're the ones with money. They're the cool ones. They're the dangerous ones. They're the ones with the cars. They're the ones, you know, that seem to be winning. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, working, fuck that.
I used to hang around with older people and I'd see them doing it. And I couldn't wait to grow up. I couldn't wait to grow up. And even now I say to people, like, I've been around the block a lot. And I'm only just gone 26. And I was always hanging around with people that were like 4 or 5 years older than me. And I was going to the nightclubs with them when I was about 14 or 15, like. And then getting off my head, taking X amount of ecstasy tablets, and then...
And they would have seen it as funny too, because the young people said, oh, he's a gas man.
I used to love the buzz, you know, going up into the queue at the nightclub, and I'm like, I'm not getting in there, and then you get in. And I felt like I made it. I'm an adult now, and I couldn't have been further away from that, like. And once I got to an adult, then the responsibilities came, I was like, what?
Yeah, you want to go back then, you're like, oh, fuck man. It, I wish I was 10, 11, 12.
Literally, again. Like, it's mad.
Anyone asks me my perfect age, it will be 10. So it's mad into BMXs. The world still revolves around you.
Yeah.
And you just...
No responsibilities, no cares in the world, no nothing.
Yeah, and I was messing, but not messing to the extent that I would be in secondary to get expelled. Mm. You know, it was controllable messing. I was just a messer, but they were used to it. You know, shut up, Stephen, you know what I mean?
How was school for you?
Primary was grand, yeah. Primary, like, I was always a messer, like, but the best teacher I had was a nun, Sister Mary Doyle, in fifth year. Because instead of clamping down on myself and Dave, who were the two messers in the class, she gave us responsibilities. She got us like writing plays, and we were the two leads in the choir. So she gave us responsibilities. So you're less likely to let her down, because it's more of a sense of letting her down than get angry. Mm. She gets angry with you can deal with it, get roared at. But when you're letting someone down, it's a different emotion. You feel like shame because, you know, she was nice to us, man. You know what I mean? So you're when you have responsibilities, you toe the line. Because pride is at stake, and doing good in what the responsibilities you're given takes kind of precedence, you know what I mean? Secondary, then it was a constant.
Non-existent.
So yeah, I just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Did you finish school?
No, I got kicked out after junior cert.
I got kicked out before the junior cert burn. I was only talking to the boys about it, but when I come up, I didn't go in for my junior cert, and I had the principal coming to me come into my room, because my mother tried everything with me. And my principal had a big lump of it was like a yard brush of a moustache. And I said to him,
that sounds menacing. My principal came into my room.
Why are you leaving out? You
can't. I've let him at night, my house.
Where
climbed in the bathroom window.
But
I was like, no, brother Frank.
I told him, fuck off. And I never went back to school. I think it was something, I was just a rebellious, wanted to be out drinking, wanted to be out taking drugs.
Some people are just anti-authoritarian. They just are. They're like, tell me to do something, I'm less likely to do it. You know what I mean? And
do the complete opposite.
Yeah. Like, I remember I never gave them the number. We didn't have a phone till like second or third year anyway, but I never gave them the number, and I used to hide the letters, get rid of them for the outfit, let's see them. But one day he got wind anyway, I don't know, parent-teacher meeting, he went down and he came home and, yeah, he came into the kitchen and he was like, Jesus Christ. And the one sentence I always remember, he goes, you could have fucking warned me. It was like a fucking ambush. Because they all thought I was doing good.
Yeah.
And then he was told, like, as a habitual liar, he can't be in a class, he can't be outside a class or he interferes. If he's in the hall, he's kicked out of four classes that he's not allowed into because it was out of art, technical drawing. And he's just, like, listed it off, like, and the awful was mortified. He said, it's not the fact that you didn't, it's that you didn't tell me.
Left with pie on his face.
Yeah, you bet them with a baseball bat with facts, you know what I mean? Yeah, so.
Obviously, when you got kicked out of school then, do you think, did the using start to progress from that point?
Well, my anxiety started to increase then.
Okay.
Because I got used to being at home and not going out.
Isolating.
So you kind of get that, when you start to go out into the, like, public again, you kind of, you have that social anxiety. And then the cure for that is drink. So then that's when I was like, this stuff. I remember then I got the taste for drinking the next morning, or drinking through, so I woke up drunk. So you have that nice warm feeling, two hands into your hand. Oh, you can feel it. Even now, like, that lovely warm feeling coming up, and it's like confidence oozing inside you. But stupid.
Relief.
Because I was a daft drunk. Like, I wasn't a falling around drunk. I was one of them ones that I could be running up the road or climbing or walking, you wouldn't know I'm drunk until you see my eyes. Something devilish fucking, you know. Just a pure messer. Like, if someone said, I bet you wouldn't climb that steep, I'm going to climb it.
Literally, we were only talking about it earlier. We were out in Salt Hill, man, and I was doing fucking backflips off the pier. And if someone was telling me, like, oh, don't do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Don't touch the red button, boom. Don't touch the wet paint, boom. I'm fucking careful, like, I really, really am. That's dangerous, though. When the drinking drugs come involved, I would do absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Madness.
With the anxiety coming up then, say, well, that would have led you down four that paths, like drinking more and excessively.
Yeah.
Or what would you have been at this age then? 15, 16?
15-ish, yeah. And we kind of started drinking a bit more than I probably should. But see, I know it's a stupid excuse to say, but everyone was kind of drinking that amount. We were all doing that. Like I'd come on with a bag of drink and the elf like, what, that's not a few, is it? And I'd be like, no, that's for myself and X and Y. And he'd be like, all right, and it would be for me. And like, and I wouldn't even say to him like that, oh, I want you to get me more then, because I'd bring the outfit on the pub. You bring a few cans, because I'd be babysitting or whatever. Like, so, yeah, the outfit would come home then and more drinking and we'd fuck off out the house. You know what I mean? Stupid.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It was the norm. It was the norm. Everybody was doing it.
And then I'd have started then kind of, before I'd go out to meet the lads or before I'd leave the house, because I knew I was so like, socially anxious in my heart, like I'd know my hands shaking and stuff, so I'd get a nagging in me before I'd go drinking to calm me down.
Calm it,
so
yeah.
I'd be like down the lad's house, because when you're in that stage you think everyone can see that a mile away. You know, I go to pick up the can and it's like that, and you're kind of like, oh Jesus Christ, you know what I mean, because you're so
all up in your own head.
Yeah And the shake, it's worse because you think that everyone's noticing it and judging you for, and you feel less of a lad and less manly because you're anxious. You're not a real man, what?
And that all goes back to, as well, not being able to take compliments and stuff like that.
Yeah. The whole macho fucking, you know what I mean? Yeah. You're a young flat. Be tough and be fucking, you know what I mean?
Times are changing, though.
No, yeah, definitely. To be honest, I grew up in a pub. And I think that's like...
I think we all did. We all went down to the pub to our parents.
Yeah.
Packet
of Scabby, glass of Coke. And I think,
A pink snack bar.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I think that was, like, it was acceptable, like.
And it was cool because everyone was so friendly, but you didn't realise then that's because they were happy drunk.
You know, didn't see it at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Like.
Yeah, exactly. I seen a fair few fights now in the pub bars.
I can imagine.
That's what I always think of. Like, you walk into a pub, everyone's happy, but if you want to be able to pause that round and look into all their heads, you'd see there was something.
Yeah.
That's why they would
see them at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Questioning yourself.
Or see them when they go home after the drinking.
Mm.
And he starts to bait the wife or, you know, X, Y, Z, you know what I mean? Mm. That's where you really want to see them, because it's a fake happiness.
Literally. False.
Yeah.
That was their solution to our mental issues, like, isn't it?
Yeah.
the remedy.
And then with drink, then like we were saying, you get the Dutch courage, you get the fake confidence.
It's madness.
So then I started getting in trouble. I was always in trouble anyway. The guards were regularly up the house for fucking, you know, rob bikes or whatever, with BMXs, mountain bikes and shit, and whatever, picking rocks and things and stuff. But then after that, it was like, oh, Greek. Oh, there's the shades. You know what I mean? And you just, if they stopped you to search you or stopped you to come around you, you're starting. Sometimes they start, in all fairness, yeah, you kick back, but like, yeah, then yeah, just in trouble all the time in court every like 2 or 3 months you're being caught. You know what I mean? Fines here and fines there.
And that was all a buzz as well, wasn't it? Me and the lads up at the courthouse.
The, it's the ego. Anyway. I think it's the ego. Like when I got in trouble as well, man, I was looking back from my memories, man. I got arrested 3 times in one night by the same cop. And I was putting up like posts the next morning saying, aha, you Raja, arrested 3 times and all this. Like oblivious.
Yeah. You're looking back now, Jesus.
I'm like, I hope my missus doesn't look at my memories on Facebook because they're absolutely ridiculous. Like, even I'm talking about.
Thank God I didn't have Facebook back in them days. Probably arrested or video cameras. Video phones.
Video cameras.
To be one of them, pardon.
Yeah.
Madness. Yeah, and then fucking, I just turned 18 and then the guards came up one morning about 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'd just gone to sleep at about 5 or 6. And my brother comes in to me and he goes, the guards out the door, what do you want to do? And I was like, I'll go down and then off to Castlery with me. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But where?
Yeah.
So, fuck. For long?
Oh, no, just for fines, unpaid fines.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so. And I remember everyone telling me inside then, like, you'd be back again 3 times. You know what I mean? You never do it once.
Never back.
Yeah, never back. Thankfully. Thankfully, yeah.
Thank God, man.
As long as I don't find out about all those murders.
Incriminated.
Yeah, yeah.
Incriminated. Oh, and did you start dabbling in drugs then?
No, not really. It was the drink for me.
Drink was the problem, yeah.
Hash early round, but.
That phased out.
Yeah, that phased out. It's the more kind of paranoid and anxious I got. Dude got withdrawn away from that because obviously that makes you paranoid and stuff.
Yeah.
The drink was my medicine. That hash wasn't working anymore. Drink will. It was. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Drink was my thing.
I was cross addicted to fucking coke and alcohol.
Yeah, so you're like comorbid fucking addiction.
Oh, man. And everything else, yeah. It strips you from everything, man. It really does. It gives you a false hope on what your life should be like.
Yeah.
And it demoralises everything you've got.
When you become comfortable in not doing anything.
Become comfortable in madness.
I
blame all them movies from America. We wanted to live like them. We wanted to be in the hood with the ghetto. Do you know what I mean? Like,
a member of Wu-Tang, the white member of Wu-Tang.
You know what I mean?
But like, at a point in my life, I was about 17 or 18. I was getting arrested every second night. I was getting my house petrol bombed. I was getting fucking stabbed, fights, you name it. And I was like, I was loving that. Completely blind to see that, like, I've got a problem here, and everything else was just falling apart around
me. Probably thought, like, oh, that's cool because I'm the mad bastard.
Yeah, but like, see, that scaring told me, hey, there, I got hit with a carjack and it could have killed me. Like, I think I continued drinking for like 2-3 days after it, pouring vodka on top of it to sterilize it. Then I ended up going to the hospital 2 days later and got 12 staples. Like, that kind of madness there, I love that. I crave the attention in all the wrong areas.
Yeah.
And
so you were getting attention down the hospital. You were getting someone kind of giving a shit about you.
Yeah, no, I don't even think it was that. I think it was just I was comfortable in the madness.
Yeah.
Because I lived in a volatile household with alcohol, rampant. My mum passed away from suicide and mental health 3 years ago. And I seen all that and I thought that might have been a deterrent. And, you know, I searched on the street what I couldn't find at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't even like a love. I don't know. I think it was like an acceptance thing.
But then you didn't want to go inside either. You didn't want to deal with what was going on in the back of your head.
I didn't even know what anxiety was.
Because that's work. That takes work.
Yeah, I didn't know what
drink or drugs.
I didn't know. Anxiety was. I didn't know what mental health was. You know, I thought, like, this is how I feel.
Yeah, I remember when I first started getting panic attacks and anxiety. I hit it to death. Because I didn't understand what this thing was. I didn't understand what was going on. People say that when you first get your panic attack, and 90% of people go up there and you think they're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
It is that scary. As Colin said there before, he goes, it shouldn't be called a panic attack. It should be called a terror attack.
Fuck it. Yeah. Terror. Yeah, 100%.
Panic. It's like, you're going to die.
Yeah, it's terror. Like, yeah. It's awful hard to explain to someone that sensation who'd never had one. awful heartaches, man.
And with the drink and the drugs, that just progressed and that became more frequent for me.
Yeah, because it's causing panic attacks and anxiety.
And you think, I mean? Oh, I'll go get more, that'll stop it. I mean, the calm down just becomes worse and worse.
Oh, I remember the good feelings from the first few lines.
Yeah.
Not the fucking when you're like,
yeah,
think you're dying from it anyway, and the panic subsides and then you do another line, thinking it's going to be that, like that first one or the one that you remember the good buzzes.
Yeah.
You don't remember the bad buzzes.
My last time using, I was in the house on my own and I had like, I don't know, maybe 7 grams of coke and a couple of bottles of whiskey. And I got to a point where I was complete psychosis, shaking, trembling, my heart was about to fall on my chest, and I'm like, oh, take another one of
them. Yeah, yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Because it was all we knew.
And each of them ones could have just been that little last bit one. Extra to push you over the edge.
Oh, 100%. But I was fantasizing that much about committing suicide, like how I was going to do it, and it just became, I remember driving home from work, and after coming down, I was driving about fucking 100 miles an hour. I was just thinking, swerve that car into the wall or into the river. Yeah. I said, it'll be all over.
Yeah, I was kind of like, when I was fucking miserable and depressed and anxious, there was a comfort in knowing that I could end it. There was that comfort knowing, because it was the last remnant of control I had. I can do it if I want to. So I'll just hang on for another day or another week. Yeah, it was a weird, like, morbid comfort, knowing that, right, if shit gets too bad, I can do it. You know, I was felt that way.
Mm. Yeah, then in your 20s, Steve, the rock bottom started to come then in your 20s with responsibilities and stuff.
More, I just felt like a waster, like I didn't have a job. I didn't, you know, it wasn't regular drinking then, it was binging. So I tried to stop it. So I fucking delay, and then go on mad.
In the exact same.
Yeah, and just drink. Like, I remember waking up in the morning sometimes, and my brother was there, and I'd be shouting, and like, get me a bottle of whiskey next door, get me, and drink it down half an hour, like it was suicidal. Like, and you know, I'd fucking, people would have to call up to the house then and help me sort myself out, or my brother haven't helped me sort myself out or get myself up or get me fucking changed after I piss myself and stuff, and you're like, this isn't all way to fucking live, man. This is, you know what I mean, it's not, like, but then you go back doing it again in 2-3 weeks time.
Yeah, you forget it, you quickly forget, like, and I can quickly forget now that, oh, life's good, I can actually, maybe I could actually use drinking drugs successfully this time, maybe they could.
Brain will start to affect you, like me, like I was saying,
that voice will always be there, like.
Yeah, it's like me, I kind of call myself now and again, I wonder could I have one or two, you know what I mean, could I train myself to be able to do like my awful drink, and you're like, no.
Do you have alcoholism in your family?
Not per se, like, but I suppose everyone drank
that way. Okay, you know, yeah,
so yeah,
I think it's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Yeah
it really is.
That's all
we all drank to get drunk. My awful was more 2-3 pints and he could come home, but he'd go down plenty of nights in the pub, but he never, like, I seen him drunk once in my life.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was...
He could hold it together.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a normal person.
Yeah, yeah. He went down to have a few, talk about politics, GA. That was his.
Yeah, social. Yeah.
He had responsibilities and, you know, I didn't think of my responsibilities. And just missing the whole appointments, going down, like, drinking an egg and shake and going down to the dole appointment.
Remember when I went to, when I started at Foss, man. The way I
done an old Foss.
Did you, yeah?
Machine tooling.
Did you, yeah?
View, yeah.
I done this.
It lasted about 4 days. I broke a lot of lead, fucking the side word. Do you know the side words, the one that cuts in, and snapped it, man, and nearly took out people's eyes and everything. I just left it. But I did feel, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks, but even that 3 or 4 weeks, I felt good in myself. I was getting up. I was feeling like I was productive. I was doing something. But it's very hard to get used to doing that when you're used to doing nothing.
What age were you when you done the fourth score?
Probably about 16.
16. Yeah. What was the ways that you would get from that?
I don't actually remember.
No.
That was the time when you got the course equivalent to the dole, but you also got like
60 quid extra. Yeah. The way when I used to get paid, I used to calculate my money in pints.
Yeah.
So how much money I had, how many pints could I get with that money? That's the way my thinking was. I was mad.
And then close to the end, you're doing the calculating on Wednesday thinking, right,
so I was just going to lend the money and then I'll pay you back next week and then after less and less. It was just mad. But yeah, I used to calculate my money.
Yeah, I wouldn't even pints. I wasn't even a pub drinker.
No?
Rarely went to pubs.
Just in the house?
Just in the house. Out bushing, like.
Yeah.
That was the thing, because you're
not going drinking.
I don't want to go in around pubs, people. Because firstly, once you get locked, you get in trouble. But secondly, just the price. Like, I can get a bottle of Buckfast and an egg and a few cans, don't pair it.
I suppose, yeah.
Box fags and away with me.
I think I used to like going out nightclubs, etc. And then as my addiction got worse and worse, I was getting more and more paranoid. I was taking more and more drugs. I'd go to the nightclub and I'm like, I can't take drugs here as much as I want. I can't wait to go home. And then eventually it just became in the house. And then towards the end, then I would go to an old man's pub where to be quiet and try and keep up with them.
Yeah.
Bottle of whiskey and a Guinness side by side every single time.
Wrestling, we lived in the flats, you see. So we were always outside as well. We used to love it, standing on the tower or down on the corner, you had the Bluetooth speaker and you could just take your bag out, all your cans sitting there. You're getting into trouble. You're getting into trouble in the pubs. We were always in trouble.
We'd find trouble too, though. Yeah. We would find it.
Always.
Make ourselves trouble.
Magnetise it.
I was even saying to the guard the last day when we were talking, I was saying, like, it's mad that you want me to do things now and see me as a, you know, a changed man and stuff. And I was like, years ago, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How does that make you feel now, though?
I don't know. I don't actually know. I haven't thought about it. I suppose proud in how far I've come that I can make a difference and people maybe see me as genuinely trying to make a difference. So I suppose there's a pride in that given the circumstances from where I've been and where I've come from. You know what I mean? So it is it's nice. It's weird, though. Like you said, you feel inauthentic, though, and imposter. You feel like, you still feel like that same little bollocks.
Yeah, you're waiting the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people are waiting for
me. And everyone's going to deal with the shingle.
Yeah.
That's what I do always think. Because I moved from Dublin down to Sligo, stuff has happened in my recovery in the last 5 years that I could have hit the focus switch and said, right, I'm going to fucking kill him, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to smash up that car. But then a little voice in my head was going off thinking, then they're going to say, there's the real Dean. Yeah, there's the Dean we haven't seen yet. You know, so then I'm able to pull back and be like, no, I can't do it anymore. I can't do that because as soon
and
as
people want that to happen, because like me on social media and things, people, if people don't like you, they have a perception of you. So then anything that's even nonsense that's made up or someone put on Facebook, whatever, they go, see, fucking you.
People are just, they love sitting there and just pointing a finger. Oh, it drives me fucking insane, man.
So like the amount of things I've heard, like, you know, I get murderer every second day on TikTok, Facebook. Like, and it's funny then, every few months or so, there'd be someone on Twitter or someone on TikTok that'll do something and it's like, aha, we've got ya. You killed a fella drink driving, and you're like, I'm not like secretive about it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your gotcha moment doesn't work. I talked about it, like, done a documentary on TV about it. I was on the Late Late Show discussing it.
You're open,
But they want to like think to themselves that they've gotcha.
It's fucking, they're just waiting for people's downtime. Yeah, they really are just waiting inside.
Instead of trying to lift each other up, they're just,
I don't get it. Like, it's just, if you don't have anything nice to say, just don't.
You're more likely to slip into that behaviour to prove them right. It's like when you're a young fella and everyone thinks you're a little fool. I showed them, wasn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
You become a little bollocks because everyone thinks you're a little bollocks. You know what I mean?
I was saying it's the people that are at that, you know, their self-confidence on the ground, their self-esteem's on the ground, they're seeing something good and they're like, they'll point out all their fucking flaws to try and get them down to their level.
Yeah. People can't stand that this skinny cripple is doing better than them. So there has to be something wrong with me. Or there has to be something that was just something more to him. You know what I mean? There has to be something that can excuse their life as it is at the moment. You know what I mean? They can't just accept that maybe he's decent and he's trying his best and, you know, he's overcome a lot.
A lot of people are so close-minded.
Yeah.
Very close-minded. Like, they're so quick to judge. I've been judged literally all my life. I remember I was going out with this girl years ago and her mates, very posh, they told her parents that, oh, stay away from him. He takes drugs, this, that, and the other.
And the parents were probably taking drugs themselves.
Literally. Mm. But so that relationship finished. And then I'd say about 2 or 3 years later, the same girl that told Yvonne's parents come up to me and asked me, can I get coke? So I said, yeah, go to the ATM, get it, whatever. And then she came back to me. I said, no, I'm only a drug dealer or a drug taker. And she just looked at the face of disgust. And quick to judge, but then when the circumstances change, you're there with your hand out, like.
Yeah.
So it's just, I hate when people do that, man. Point finger and judge. It's not nice.
Yeah, it's hard to stay out of that as well, isn't it? Because we love that negativity. It's hard to stay away from that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you could have 500 positive comments, but then one negative one you'll be stuck in and all the rest
of it. We're evolutionarily predisposed to focus on that because the line in the long grass thing. You know, that's the danger. So you're going to focus on that.
100%.
And so we don't believe, like, I don't believe in positive comments, but I find myself believing in the negative ones. It'll be an effect by them. You hear one boo over 1,000 cheers. You know what I mean? That's the way it is. Although you kind of wonder why he came to the show to boo in the first place.
Yeah,
100%. It's often the fella in the shows, though, they just sit there like that. Because his wife dragged him along, or his girlfriend.
He'd be the first one I'd call him.
I do. Look at the face. And oh, and say, anyway, I went to the former Michael show, the last one. Disgusting from start to finish. I do this little accent joke. And they kind of, their defense is kind of lowered in a bit. They're like,
wow. Yeah. And what the comedy of came about?
Oh, I was always a clown. Like, school. I was the ultimate attention seeker. Like, yeah. It's like, it's mad as well. I mean, like, going back to Facebook and going on to social media, or people are like, he's such an attention. It's my job. Like, are like, what, you're promoting this all the time. You wouldn't know what the show was on if I didn't promote it. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, guys, we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back just after the ad.
This season is sponsored by Cloud9 Dogs, the Norway's first doggy daycare centre, located on the old Dublin Road, Carrow, Sligo. If you're inside a 10k radius, have your dog picked up in the doggy van and dropped home after daycare. Opening hours are 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Get your dog groomed by their groomer that has over 12 years experience in the game. If you're going on holidays, you can also book your dog into the Cloud9 Dogs Hotel, located on the premises, where night staff will be present. Find them on Facebook, Instagram and even TikTok. For all your doggy needs, their website is www.cloud9dogs.com. That's www.cloud9dogs.com.
But yeah, I was always the class clown. You know, I was always the messer. I was always the joker. I was always that kind of way. And I just, you know, being a Galway fella as well, you do accents of everyone.
Yeah.
You do accents of everyone around Galway.
You do a dub?
Not really, no. I can, but like Starny Wood, you know. Waiver for the hostel, yeah.
my wife rips the piss out every day. Well, we're together over 5 years, and every day she'll take one word out of the day and she'll just rip the piss out.
I do that as well.
Every single day.
I do that with you as well, yeah. Have you ever heard of like sound baths or meditation? No, they're like meditation, like different sound therapies and stuff. And he said to his wife he wanted to do meditation teaching. And his wife was like, I don't think that'll work with an inner city Dublin accent. He goes, why? She goes, lie down, close your eyes, empty your pockets.
You know, if I'm...
Do you want some cheese?
Oh, man, I swear, when you told me that, like, you didn't give me a heads up, it was live on the show, and I couldn't fucking breathe, man.
All the abuse again. But I can take it today, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking quality, man.
The banter, you need a bit of banter.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Life is, like, the life can be miserable, man, so, like, literally, try and find a funny side of something.
Yeah, I have to laugh.
And you do that brilliantly.
I wouldn't have got through my accident if I didn't have a sense of humour, and I would have done myself in there. And then our family has always done that. Like, we've always kind of joked about things. Like, even when my mother, when she had bad Alzheimer's and dementia, and she'd say something stupid or whatever, myself in the outlet laugh, as opposed to reacting to it. Because then my two younger brothers would pick up on that.
Of course.
Just kind of laughed about it, you know. Yeah. Made it, I suppose, less severe on them. Because you're always kind of aware of the effect it would have on them. Because she got it when she was like mid-40s, like, so. Yeah, so fairly severe.
Yeah.
It's a horrible disease. Like, you lose the person twice, like, they die twice.
Fucking hell, man. Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, so I was always kind of, so I was joking, and I just remember like doing farmer raps, just doing
that, man, that fresh
at the time.
Fresh Prince, yeah, like that. That's fucking brilliant.
Heard rap songs at that time, and I just like bogger them up. Yeah. I remember one night I was sitting in Air Square, and I said to my brother Ron, I said, will you record me there, and I'll do like, you know, voice or whatever. So I just went, it was very west of Ireland. I was just going on about EU grants and farms and stuff. And a lot of people didn't think I was from Ballinasloe, and where are you from? And I was like, no, I'm from Westside, man. I've been farming in my childhood. That's about it. You know, how do you know the things? I look up stuff sometimes. Yeah. You know,
use your initiative.
Yeah, but it was Farmer Martin.
Farmer Martin first.
Yeah, the first video. Yeah. Farmer Martin. Yeah, and then I do a few more, and then I done one where I called out Conor McGregor for stealing my style. I was going to break him up. That fell in a fire.
Did he respond?
No. But the time I met him, he was there. That was you little bollocks. So,
what? Yeah. Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Then you just start to get big on social media, and you're like, "Is this going to be my job now?" and people start coming over for dinner, selfies and recognising.
Did you think outside when I went up to the carriage, did you think I was a fan?
No.
All right. I was saying to them, I was like, they definitely just thought I was some fucking random fella coming up to the car. No. My hair was going through me, says.
You could have got shot. What?
with the comedy side of things, did you have the attentions that you were, that's what you were going to pursue, or did it kind of just take off?
No, it took off and I just went with the flow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never see myself doing something like this. Even now, I can't see myself doing something like this. Like, even today, my chest is kind of sore and I'm a bit anxious because of it. I couldn't imagine myself getting up on stage, but yet I do it. But like it is a trial to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not back in the green room sitting with everyone drinking tea and having a laugh. I'm in the car having panic attacks trying to relax myself and control my breathing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worst thing you can do because it's a safety behavior which strengthens the need for safety.
Yeah.
But you have to cope as well.
How do you find coping with that? Like, cause that's, it's quite difficult because for me that'd be a trigger.
I'm just so used to it.
And do you find it gets easier as it goes on?
The anxiety, yeah, in the last while it has, but still, when it comes to shows and stuff, no, still, it's still as... Like, I remember we were doing the Southport Comedy Festival in England, and I couldn't... I was shaking so much I couldn't get out of the car to get into the wheelchair. So the boys had to rip the top off a pub table and get duct tape and create a ramp so I could get up onto stage. And I was in the like front of the pub like this, just waiting until they announced my name. And then I went up, and within, like, 15, 30 seconds, it's gone.
Yeah. So,
but then, again, it's stress because... You know, the sport actor, the opener, the MC, whatever, to them it's more relaxed. They're going to get paid, and if they fuck up, nothing's going to happen to them. If they fuck up, it'll come back on me. If I fuck up, it'll come back on me. If you know, so
it's lonely out there as well with the comedy. It's on your own. Nobody can help you.
Yeah.
It's all you.
Well, I have Roxy, obviously. She met the one at Kathleen, so she saved me a few nights where I completely just blanked, like, and she'd be like, so you're going to thing, Michael? And I'd be like,
yeah.
So you're going to the, oh yeah, you're going to have to. It's handy to have that, you know what I mean?
That's a massive step, taking that, like, because you've obviously said that from a young age you struggle with anxiety, and to go the big gig now coming over to America and stuff like that. And like, that's massive, man.
Yeah, I remember, like,
put yourself out there. Like,
in the early days, like, people ask me, like, do I do gigs or would you do a show at the, or pub or blah 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 X, Y, and Z. I was like, get the fuck up, there's not a chance. Get away from me. I wouldn't even know where to start. I remember at the beginning, then I remember we'd done the Bray Comedy Festival, and like your man Adam goes to me, he goes like, you do 10 minutes. I had about 4 minutes roughly calculated off stuff because it's a big alteration to go from a sketch to go to a full set.
Mm.
So like, it managed to give him 10 minutes. Like, now you do an hour easy because you're comfortable within the set.
It's just having a conversation with the
crowd more than anything. Yeah. And it's just like, Kathleen will ask me a question or prompt me about something, and then a lot of it then is like, you stick to the set, but you also go off on ad libs as well and go off on the crowd a bit now and again, and you'll come up with a fucking great one, then you'd be like, that's going into the show. So we built up as I went each gig, something new come out, and that got wrote into it, I suppose. So
do you get triggers now today, like going to those kind of the outings, like stand up or in pubs, restaurants, bars?
No. Mine are sunny days. Sunny days when I'm on my own driving around. That's when it just hits me, like, as you think back at the sun. Because, you know, when you were a teenager or early 20s, that's when you went drinking.
Yeah.
It was a lovely sunny day in the summer. You know, and you get a few cans, head up dangin' or something. You know, so that's my kind of weak spot.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I think it was last year. I was swimming with the lads out in Mullaghmore, and I had a wetsuit on, and we were all drinking out there. We came back to Sligo, was drinking down at the river. And then all the lads were like, right, we're going into town now. So I went into town outside the Gareth Walkman in a wetsuit till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And then, like, I tried to get in the door then, man. My missus, like, please tell me you weren't out till 4 o'clock and in a wetsuit.
See, that's my safety spot. When I'm out, you know me. Anytime, if I'm out in my car listening to music, that's my safety zone. And I'm on my own. I need to be on my own because I'm an awful people pleaser. Come on, we do this, we do that. So I love to just get in my car and go off.
Escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when I find I can just be with myself.
When I used to be very anxious, like I said, I'd go down to the car and just panic by myself. And then I had a very bad panic attack in the car up in Dublin before. It lasted about 45 minutes when my nose was bleeding. I was trying to like reassure myself that I was getting air and stuff. And after that, shit went south and I became agoraphobic for a while because my safety spot was taken.
What's that?
My like going to the car, like if I got panicky to get into the car. And I can relax. Right, that was taken from me then. And then when I got home, I got another really bad panic attack in my house. So then my two safety, they were gone. So it was raw. I was exposed. I was vulnerable. So that took a lot then. Like, I went down to the doctor. I had to leave 4 hours earlier to get enough wherewithal to get into the car, and then sitting outside the doctor's for a few hours to get enough to get in, even going to the bathroom, getting up. You know, I'd feel, because, and that was exertion on the body causes your breathing to increase, which causes your heart rate to increase, and then you get into the vicious circle, full-blown fucking panic. So yeah, that was a bastard of a time. Like, it was just inching my way, like, go downstairs and sit in the couch maybe for half a minute, a minute, go back up to the room in the night, yeah, and then maybe go out to the car and touch the car, open the door and go back into the house. So it was a hard few weeks to try and drag myself out of that. Like,
and people don't see that. Like, people look at what you do on social media and you're very positive and very bubbly, and you,
I can be a miserable git too,
but people don't see that. And like what you've just explained there, that you know, you're just a normal person, you know?
Yeah, they can't imagine me being an anxious, nervous person.
Yeah,
I suppose because they see the videos and they're always like, film,
like, oh, no, like, no, you would.
I'd probably make a move on your mother and stab you. No, you don't want to go drink with me. Like,
no one say.
Don't, like.
And do you find that the comedy is helping you in your recovery?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it opened up the avenue to be a bit more vocal about mental health and a bit more vocal about my past and the drink driving and all that, and just kind of confronted, I suppose. Because, like, in the early days, like, even in the videos, I hid the crutches. I'd put them in the back of the car. Or if I knew someone was looking for a selfie, I wouldn't get out because I had to take the crutches out. Because I thought if I hid it, no one will know about it. I won't have to explain that part to me. You know what I mean? But then I got a bit more comfortable with just, yeah, and say, look, cripple myself, fuck it. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is me. It's the only body I have left.
Did you come out on national TV and explain all this? Or did you just do this gradually? Or
Just gradually, yeah. But I suppose the Late Late Show is where people kind of first kind of knew about it, like, it seen a different side to me, I suppose. And like, kind of people said, like, oh, different opinion on, you know, because people just like, oh, that loud and lame bollocks. They like to see you think you're like that, or that you're a cocky cunt. But then again, like we were saying, people will always read into you in a certain way. Like, if I come into a pub and I'm very anxious and I'm not very talkative, smug prick in the corner, not even talking to anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm thinking I'm dying. I'm contemplating ringing an ambulance. People don't like to think that. Or you come in talking in and being talkative, what the fucking cocky prick talking to everyone? Like, you can't win.
You can't. You really can't, no, man.
It's labels, isn't it? People are always going to put a label on you no matter what.
Yeah. I've learned not to go to pubs or nightclubs because drunk people, they won't approach you, but they'll say it under the breath walking past. And when I'm out, like, I won't take it. I'm a prick. Like, I will straight up call them out, ask them to fight me and everything. Like, I'm just that way, I suppose. You let someone walk over you, it's like, wait a minute, I'm even fucking, you know what I mean?
The choice.
Yeah.
Part and parcel with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I should just not give a shit. You know what I mean?
That's, but you do hard though.
Just hard. As a comedian and as someone that's anxious, you want acceptance.
Yeah,
some
of course.
Would like you, and you can't understand why someone that doesn't know you at all would hate you and want you dead. Yeah. You can't understand it. Like, there's comedians on Facebook like that I wouldn't particularly find funny. I'm not going to threaten their family or wish them death. Yeah. Just don't like his stuff. And I suppose,
it's not my style.
Yeah, but you see the other side of them, and fair fucks to them for doing it.
Acceptance is a big one, though.
Yeah.
Massive. That's one I kind of struggle with now at the moment, acceptance.
Sounds like I grew up in the morning, ready to get dressed, and I'd be like, right, what am I going to wear? Take your own outfit. Oh, no, that will make people think this, and this outfit will make people think that. And I'm fucking sitting on the bed then thinking, what the fuck am I going to wear? Like,
I probably didn't help that, did I, when you got out of the car?
Yeah.
Was he wearing a polka dot skirt?
I just said to him, I was like, you're not wearing that. He goes, why? What the fuck's wrong with this?
The guy says, you're not getting changed. I was like, what do you mean? And he just went walking off laughing.
Way to make a fella feel like shit. Like,
oh, man. I probably had fuel to that fire. Apologies on that.
No, that wasn't, because you've done it.
Look, would we be Irish without fucking ripping the shite out of it?
And that's true as well. Like, that's true as well. The one, like, for me, I'm a slagging bastard.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be.
We used to destroy each other.
Yeah.
The shit we used to say to each other when we were 12, 13, 14.
Yeah, and when the drink was involved in the drugs, it was just pure and utter.
But it means you like them. If you're not slagging someone, you don't give a shit about them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
The only one that actually outslagged me was my missus, man, put me in my box one night when we were out. And I just didn't know what to say. I still don't know what to say to this day.
Yeah, people come over to me when they're getting selfie. They might say something or try to get a slag on, and you're like, I'd tear you apart. Literally, I just don't want to go there. Like, and you can tell by their dimp straight away that they can't slide for that, but they're trying, and you're just there. I don't.
I think for me, I think it was a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Coping, like, by just...
It's deflection as well. Is that if you get the first one in, you're less likely to be the target.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
I mean, so that was a big thing for me. I was always the slacker, like, even in school. Like, and that, it got me away from getting bait and sting because I was a small and skinny fella in secondary. Because, will you, because he'll slag you, you know, sting will slag you, you know what I mean? Although it didn't work in my favour a few times, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But, yeah, it was kind of, it was protection, wasn't it? Protective mechanism, like, to...
Yeah, big time. I see a lot of my slagging in primary and then going into secondary. Because I'm not funny. You know, I always tell myself I'm funny. And Lydia, my wife, she had to turn around and she was like, Dean, you're not funny. You need to leave that to Mano. Because I'd be going into Lydia, I'd be like, I was thinking of this for the podcast. I was thinking of this funny thing to do. And I'd make a big scene and I'd tell her and she'd be sitting there and she'd be like, it's not Dean. Please do not do that. That's not funny. So it's like, right now, he's the joking addict. But that's where I fell short of the slagging. Now, everyone else would be slagging and I'd be trying to slag back. But I'd say something fucking sick. And then, that would get
and then the 11 lads would just go silent, going like...
Yeah. That's the bullying in primary and secondary, and then even after secondary, like, because I couldn't get on with the slagging. I'd take everything in. Do you know what I mean? For years and years, I took everything in. And I'd just say something fucking nasty to hurt them, rather than just to slag them back. And then I'd end up fucking hiding.
And you can tell, like, you can tell when someone's been
malicious.
You can tell. Like, you want, if the lads, when the lads starts, you're like, oh, you want to go down that road. You know what I mean? Like,
then the digs start.
Yeah. And then they all, like, oh, I was only slagging with you. Or, like, I get a lot of, like, shit on social media. And then, like, thought you were a comedian. Your mother's dead, ha ha. What's wrong? I thought you were a comedian. Like, what's wrong with you?
How do you deal with that? Like, how do you deal with the shit on social media? It's only starting for us now.
I've learned to...
Kill them with kindness?
Yeah, not reply as much or not get sucked in by it. Just block them and fuck them. But some of them can be very fucking... They'll come to Instagram then or they'll email you.
Or they'll make fake accounts.
We have one guy on TikTok, don't we? And he keeps coming back and back and back every few months. He only come back there yesterday.
He's like, oh, would you not get a job or something like that? And I said, oh, you've had a great start to the year. You've had a great start to the year. Thanks for sharing your positivity.
Yeah. But do you have to worry about people like that? That it come back, like... Yeah. You're that much in their attention span that they need to just...
I think they're
going
to have to start looking over my shoulder again. Like.
And imagine how many people he's doing that too. Like.
Yeah.
But because I suppose he's down in himself and all confidence feels bad in his life in the direction it went, so...
Bring everyone down with him.
Yeah, cut everyone else down, like, yeah.
It's mad.
It's sad, like.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Negative attention is still attention. Yeah. You know, so.
We'll pray for him. We'll do the deck of rosary over him.
At the cage.
That fucking window.
Your part, I should have kept looking around. Oh,
man.
So a question for you two. Are you positive about your...
Recoveries
and futures and stuff?
Yeah. Very, very positive. I'm open-minded to new ideas, new experiences. Very closed-minded for a very, very long time. My way did not work. I have a good... support around me now at the moment. Thankfully, I didn't lose my partner or my son. They've been great help to me as well. And the new experience, like I said, doing yoga, sound baths, cold water dips. I'd love to do a retreat as well, a spiritual retreat.
Looking after myself.
Exactly, man, because I didn't do it for long enough. And do you know what? I always expected everyone else to look after me. And when that stopped, I just like, well, no one else is going to do it. So I just created turmoil around me. For me now, I have a very simple life. I go to work, I get a meeting every now and again, surround myself with the right people, like-minded people that are not drinking, not taking drugs, and I just isolate myself away from people.
What do you think was the biggest help for you to get to where you are now?
I think I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live. I was at a crossroads of I'm either going to kill myself, leave everything behind, or I love an underdog story. I love all odds against other people. So I was either going to do that or I was going to prove everyone wrong and prove myself right. I knew I had the capabilities of doing it, but I just didn't know where to go. Yeah. I didn't know how to get the help. I didn't know fucking A or NA or CA existed. I thought it was just something you do on your own. You're a full-blown alcoholic. You go to the pub, you can have your drinks, I didn't know that I have an allergic reaction to fucking alcohol and cocaine. That every time I do them, something bad happens. My family have been a great support for me. Massive support for me. And the likes of himself and a couple other members.
You know,
you got a compliment. You got
a compliment, yeah. I'll take it today.
Yeah. But I've never had that. I've never had people, you know, it was all right, like sitting around the kitchen off my head fucking talking about dead people and fighting and all this kind of stuff, thinking it was therapeutic, but it was fucking far from it. I've just surrounded myself with negative people all my life. I wish for it and I got it. Yeah, I wish for that negativity and that turmoil and that violence and all that kind of stuff, and I got it.
You'll receive what you give. Like I always said, like in my teenage years, man, I walked around with a skinned head, big thick look on me all the time. And people react to that.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're a bit more friendly.
It's perception.
People are friendly back. But nowadays, less so, you know what I mean? Because
it's perception as well. Like, what you put out, you get back. If I look a certain way, people are going to judge you regardless. And I think that's very, very important as well. Yeah, I'm very confident about my recovery. I'm happy. Happy I don't have to drink or take drugs. Got a dip this morning. And I still can't feel me fucking face.
I love the very fact that you're doing this and can come out and do a podcast and travel around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a massive achievement that you're still not in the stage where you're in the cowardly stage.
Yeah. I think putting myself out there as well, because he came to me with the idea of the podcast when I was, not even 60 days in clean. And I was like, you know what, if something's going to change, I'm a firm believer, if you always do what you always done, you'll always get what you always got.
Yeah.
So by doing new things, the doors that have opened up so fast, it's just like, what the fuck?
It'd be awful ironic if you were like, sponsored by Bombers.
Yeah, not far from it.
Sponsored by Anto.
Sponsored by Castle Reek, because that's where I'd end up. That's where I'd end up.
And yourself then?
Yeah, today, I'm fucking, every day I wake up, I'm blessed. I feel blessed every day I wake up. Do you know what I mean? That I'm getting another chance at life. Because for so long, I was just so lost. So alone. Fucked over. Anybody that came into my life, we fucked them off. Four younger
sisters. The softer they are, the fucking more of a soft touch there.
Vulnerability.
Yeah. Like four younger sisters I have, and I fucked over every single one of them. You know, the communion money, confirmation money, birthday money, wherever. Do you know what I mean? And always treated them like shit. Like they were from out on the street.
But she probably excused them by having the thing that I paid them back, like I will pay them back. You know?
Yeah, it was always... I was lost from an early age, you know, and to today, to be able to come and do things like this, to be able to meet people like yourself, do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm fucking doing this. With the help of people around me today, you know, I came to Sligo with a bag of clothes just over 4 years ago, a half a black bag of clothes. And over time, you know, going into meetings and finding out that I'm an addict and all stuff like this and getting into the meetings and all, finding out, right, okay, you can go and you can do this about it. Going into my feelings, because for a long time that was all. I was just dead inside.
No, you don't want to go in. Yeah. You don't want to expose yourself to your own emotions and feelings.
Yeah, and today I can go and do that. You know, I just finished a step 5 with my sponsor yesterday in NA, and it was finding out all my stuff in step 4 with my inventory list and all. You know, it was finding out why I'd done all that and where it was all coming from. It was all fair. You know, every bit of it was fear. I was afraid, so I was going to do the maddest thing or be the maddest lad just to get away from
real life is terrifying when you have addiction. Like, the worst thing you fear is like normality in real life. You know what I mean? It's a scary thing.
You said it earlier about putting in the work. For me, I was just always looking for the shortcuts. Anything I could do in my life, shortcut, instant gratification, instant success, and all this kind of stuff. Afraid to actually put the work in.
And then, you know, as life goes on, you know, all the shit that was happening in my life, I wasn't ready. I was never ready to look at any of it. Do you know what I mean? I always just wanted to go forward up, blocked that out. You know, my two mates got shot dead, mistaken identity. And I kept on using. I kept on drinking. I kept on trying to be a drug dealer.
Jesus, I kept on drinking after killing a fella in a drunk driving crash.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
It's strong, isn't it?
Yeah. I left the National Rehab Hospital in a wheelchair, got two Dublin fellas that were walking down the road to push me down to Baker's Corner to go in and get drunk. Like, 2 months after the crash. Neck brace, a neofrac jacket, and one hand in a fucking sling. Not able to feel my body from the nipple lying down. You know what I mean? The staff from the hospital had to ring the pub to see if it was down there and go down and get me. And I got belligerent then that I was getting taken out. I was like, I'm leaving. I'm not a prisoner. I'll fuck you, you know, and get pure taken. Like, Jesus Christ. You know, if you go drinking after something like that, like, you kind of sit back to yourself and go, yeah, there's a problem there. Like,
well, you're expecting different results.
But it was an escape as well. Yeah. Because fucking the position I stupidly put myself in. I needed to escape from that. What's the escape? Your demon, your training.
Because growing up in Ireland, in Dublin, Sligo, Galway, no matter where you go around Ireland, around the whole world, you weren't meant to talk about your feelings. Nobody talked about it for months. It was all chest out, shoulders back. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Why is it like about being gay for your feelings? You know what I mean? That's the way it was.
That's what I struggled with. I moved from Arba. I was living in Arba Hill, around the corner from Smithfield. And then we moved into a block of flats in the middle of Dublin. And these lads are walking out like this. What the fuck? Like, they're after putting me into the middle of the ghetto here. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it was torture there for a few years. You know, so it was just all, everything I'd done then was just all fear-based.
Yeah, sure. I remember the outflow went down to the doctor room when I was about 16. When I was first having, like, bad panic attacks and anxiety and stuff. And the doctor was talking and he said, we think it might be like panic disorder or whatever and blah, blah, blah. And then the outfit was like, oh, you'll get through it. They'll give you meds or they'll help you through it somewhere. It was only a couple of years later that like my outfit actually said to me, looking back at that, oh, I had panic attacks and anxiety. But he never relayed that to me or never felt comfortable enough to say, I went through what you went through.
That would have been...
Because he's like, he's an old-fashioned Irish man of the 50s. And I'm like that.
Yeah.
I'm like that today. So I can't deal with, come at me swinging a fist, I can deal with you emotionally wise, but come at me crying and looking for her. I'm like, I don't know how to react.
Yeah, that's my wife. She's like, oh, well, you should fucking crying. And I'm there in bits on the other side of the bed, like, do you know what I mean?
I said to me missus last night, or I came home from a meeting, I said something to her. I was like, oh, meeting was, I thought it was tough or something. She goes, oh, what? No.
Thanks for the support,
mate. Well, I said, do you know what? Forget it.
Fuck yeah, Jim.
Fucking hell.
But yeah, little whining bastards. You'd be better off back on the drinking drugs.
Oh, the first of it. Oh, yeah. Stephen, even though that you're not feeling the best, we really, really appreciate you coming down, taking time out of your day, man, to fucking sit down with us.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I really, really...
Shout out to the Galmont Hotel here in Galway as well for lending us the Burden Suite to get this done.
Yeah. Beautiful.
You know, take down your Christmas decorations.
Yeah, I was lucky. You're lucky you clarified it with me because I would have been out in the Clayton now and over the hell. Yeah. I was like, the boys went back on it.
You find us down the pub.
Yeah, I said, you do know where you're going. He goes, yeah, the Clayton. I said, nope. No, look, we really appreciate you. Powerful story, as I said, and all-around lovely bloke, sometimes. No, I'm only joking, but...
I'm a bollocks.
Not at all, man. Not at all.
I mean, you're going out, can you go out the back door because we didn't pay for this room?
Sting me down the window in the wheelchair, I'll say it. Load of pulleys. Men to work the pulleys.
No, but it was lovely, man. Really, really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Nice and good.
Got me out of the house. Got me out of the house.
Guys, thank you for tuning in for another episode of Lock, Stock and Two Joking Addicts. Again, I just want to say a heartfelt thank you for Stephen for coming along.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. We'll wrap it up here. Boom.